from the time that they pronounced me dead was a good 45 minutes.
They cut my clothes and then they paddled my heart because my heart had stopped. And I could see people screaming and crying, but I didn't realize that was actually my physical body because I was somewhere else.
The only thing that I could feel, if you can imagine, absolute love and peace. There wasn't anything else to be felt.
I was greeted by people I had known in the past.
I'm back home again.
Incredibly safe and felt at home.
Welcome, welcome to Round Trip Death, everybody. And a warm welcome to our special guest today, Cara Marlene, coming to us from Dallas. How is it in Dallas today, Cara?
It's beautiful. Like we were talking about a little bit earlier, it's starting to cool down. So we're all outside with our dogs, our bikes, and having a really good time.
A little fall weather can be a good thing in Texas.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, I've been there in the summer, and I'm sorry you have to endure that, but lots of people love it there, and so that's fantastic. Anyway, before we jump into your NDE, and I think people are going to just love this. It's just such a beautiful, sweet story that we're going to hear today. But tell us a little bit about you before. Who's Cara?
Of course, my name is Cara Marlene. I come from a very small town in Kansas and didn't know much about that, and then got into the big world, traveled around, wound up in Dallas. I am a creative by nature, so I sing and I write, did a little acting or whatnot, and found myself on this journey with love, and that's via a childhood NDE. That's how we met, which I'm very grateful for.
So are you going to sing for us today?
If you all sing a little ditty for you, that'd be fine. We can end with that if you want.
That'd be cool.
Okay, cool.
Do you have one that goes with your experience?
No, but I am writing. So the funny part about where my life is now, I'm a blues singer and classic country singer. And so, you know, lots of those. It's almost like a broken heart to a beat kind of thing. I found my love of writing with music is coming back. So there's actually, now that you mention it, I've got an EP of more bluesy things coming out. So I don't have anything with me because I don't have my guitarist or my backups, but you'll be the first one to know about it when it does come out.
Send me a link. I'll stick it in the show notes. If anybody wants to hear the bluesy Cara, that'd be fun. I just think, wow, NDEs fit right in with that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because it can be sad what happens, you know, before. And for a lot of people, it's a struggle afterwards. And we'll talk about how you did afterwards. But all right, let's go back to when you were a little kid, about 8 years old. What led up to the fateful day of the bike crash?
Thank you for asking. So I was just a normal eight-year-old on bikes outside with my little sister. I was raised, like I said, in a micro town. It's about 500 people in Kansas, and on a ranch outside of that's where we had the home I grew up in. And I was outside, beautiful spring day. My older sisters were inside, and one of them hollered for us to come in, and I wanted to take one more round on my bike. And my father owned a very large construction company. Next to the barn is a garage. They called it the tool shed. And it had a water lip, which is a cement block that kind of goes on the bottom of the garage door to keep the water out. I remember seeing this gouge in it, and I thought that that would be a really good ramp because it looked, you know, like a ramp. So our house was on top of the hill. I took off down towards that garage, and I hit that bump, and I went over the handlebars because my bike just stopped. That's like that split seconds when everything changed, because as I lifted off the bike and the seconds between lifting and hitting the ground, my awareness just opened up full throttle. It's almost like oneness and awareness just literally just, and I didn't know that at the time that's what happened, but that's what I know now today. And it's like it encircled me in this bubble of protection, and I hit the ground, but I heard it. It was almost so, it's so odd because I heard it. I know I hit the ground, but it's almost like I heard it from a distance. And I remember hearing myself crumble and kind of letting out a sigh and then just blacking out. I was gone. And I remember waking up on my back And I could see the blinding light coming into the garage door and then the darkness around it. Immediately, I knew something was terribly wrong because I couldn't move my body. Like it was like I was trapped in a 1,000-pound weight, but I could see and I could move my mouth. So I looked at the garage door again in the light and there was a figure there. I couldn't tell if it was female or male or what age it was, but I thought it was my sister because my little sister was out there. She was like 5 or whatnot. I asked her, I told her, I need help. I can't get up. There's something really wrong. Go get mom and dad. And the figure didn't move. And of course, I thought it was my sister. So I got upset and scared and I got a little upset and said, mom and dad are going to be so mad at you. I need help. Like, you have to help me. Like, go get help. And as I was speaking to her, pleading with her, my awareness kicked in and I was kind of taking in what was going on. And I eventually stopped speaking. And I remember looking around at the darkness that held that light. The more I looked at it, the more I realized it wasn't like the garage, because you should see the ceiling and the walls full of tools and things. I didn't see that. What I saw was like space. That darkness was like the blackness of space, and it went on forever. But immediately I'm like, okay, if this is space, there's nothing there holding me. But there was, as grounded as I'm in this chair. And then I looked at the light streaming in and I tried to see past it, like it was sunlight or whatnot, or kind of focus my eyes. I should have seen like the sky, the cattle trailer, things like that. I couldn't see any of it. And all of a sudden it clicked that I wasn't in my family home anymore. And this light coming in was light and life itself. And the darkness, the vastness of space was the space that holds that, like that void they sometimes call it. With that understanding, I looked at that figure again and I spoke to it and I said, am I dying? Am I dead? Is this heaven? And inside of me, I call it the dwelling space, but it's like this never ending crevasse of just love cracked open. And it's like, it filled everything. It's almost like it literally oneness with just love just poured, not poured out of me. It's almost like it just opened up as I was like taking all of that in, like just feeling the purest presence of love. I realized taking in the light and the dark and the love itself, I realized there was no fear. Like I wasn't afraid of anything. It's almost like it couldn't even exist. I just honestly like basked in that for a while. As I took it all in, I looked back at that figure and for the first time I heard it speak to me, but with an inner voice. Like I didn't hear it. It's like I heard it inside. And it said, are you ready? In almost a few seconds, there was like a very small life review. Like my dogs are okay. My family is okay. But the most present realization was, this is love, and wherever it is taking me, wherever it goes, whatever it means, I'm in. And I said yes. And so as I said yes, I fell into that love within, that dwelling place. And as I fell into that, like body, mind, and soul, it was getting darker. And I remember there was a space where like that fear-free love existed and then fear could exist. And I remember crossing over that. And that's when I was going back into my body. I woke up, hours later, speaking to my mom, like I'm speaking to you. And I stopped and I was like, mom, what am I doing here? Where am I? Cause I was on the couch covered up. It had been a while cause it was actually in the afternoon, like into the evening, when I was on the couch, and she was confused. She didn't know why I was asking all these questions, and trying to tell her things about what happened. And so she left and I had a mirror in my hand. I remember seeing this part of my face, the little second grader's face, and I tilted the mirror up and I remember just absolutely screaming because there was a contusion, a huge dark black contusion that had like bubbled out. Like if you took like a large lemon or an orange and you just cut it in half, it was like a on the second grader's head. I remember when my mother finally did like take me to the doctor, he was so mad. My mother had 8 natural children and he was the one that took care of all of them. And I was only 8, but I'd never from that point before and that after ever yelling at my mother. And he was like, you should never have waited. You should have come immediately. I don't know what you were thinking. Like, she should be dead. 1 and 2, if she ever gets hit there, like for the rest of her life, she's gone. She's dead. Like she shouldn't be here. Kind of. Anyhow, after that, my life turned into this beautiful love story with me and the divine. I call it divine, God, Gaia, whatever you want to call it. I call it love, and this unrelenting pursuit of love in my life.
Okay, let's take a break there. I want to dig into some of this. I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and then we'll move forward with how your life changed. Well, I'm not sure where to start, but one of the things is, did you have any kind of feeling for this figure, as you called it, or a personage or whatever? What did it look like? Did you have any feeling for who maybe it was?
I'm so glad you asked that, because that took me years to really kind of vet out. And the feeling was, it was so familiar that I didn't doubt that I was unsafe. You know, I never doubted I was safe, because the light coming in was so blinding. I couldn't tell if it was female or male, but I know it wasn't like an angel. It wasn't an alien. I don't believe it was a guide. A lot of times people see that, like, guides or whatnot on their way, and it wasn't like a family member, right? What I believe happened is that, having a near-death experience and walking the path that I've had with love, I believe love meets us with exactly what we need at that time. And so I believe that it was love itself taking a blurred form, familiar enough for me to speak to it and not, you know, be afraid and whatnot, but also reach me at 8 years old, have such a defining, beautiful connection with it. And the reason I say that is because I don't connect with, like, guides or family members. Like, it wasn't a grandmother or it had passed. It wasn't like anything like that. I don't actually connect with that. Like, I've never had that as a guide in my life. I've always just had, like, very tangible moments with love itself. And maybe that's confusing for some people, but that's the only way I can explain it, because it was, like I said, it was familiar enough to where I wasn't afraid, but it wasn't someone else or something else. And so I believe that it was love showing up.
Wow.
Yeah.
But in some kind of a figure, so an 8-year-old could relate to it as if it was a person.
Yeah.
Versus if it was a blur or a blip or whatever, you may not have talked to it.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. All right. I want to talk about this love and fear. Two words that you used. You talked about the lack of fear, but why? I mean, what do love and fear have to do with each other? What do you think?
I believe that there is an option of fear in the human form. And I believe outside of that, like, let's say when I transition, because this is my experience, when I transition out of this after this body dies, I believe I walk into the purest presence of love itself, like in the afterlife, whatever form that. Some people will know heaven, some people will know other worlds or whatnot. And I believe there is an option for allowing fear or love to run your life. So we all know, like, healthy fear, right? Like, we know the healthy fear that keeps us alive. You know, that's, you know, don't go pet an alligator. That's something that you shouldn't be doing.
Good example.
I
don't know where that came from.
I'm sorry, I have no idea. Like, but what I found on my journey is that I could either give in to fear or doubt. So everything that comes from love, like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control, are all really great little flowers from, like, the love garden, right? That's kind of how I see it. But then there's fear, and there's, like, doubt and lack and scarcity and whatnot. And so I believe that outside of this, we have this world or this life, we have honestly nothing but love. But here in this life, we have the opportunity to know the opposition of love, which is fear. And we can choose to have a love-based existence. It's almost like when people, I was raised Christian, when they says heaven come down, or like bring heaven down, I think that we can live that existence now. Because a lot of times I was taught that heaven comes later, we just have to kind of like suffer to be here. And I was like, I just don't think so. Like, I think that there is an option to live through love, live in love. And the opposition of love is fear. And I think that that gives us a beautiful experience here in the human form, for me anyway. Allow that to happen every day, because I wouldn't necessarily know the depth, the breadth, the width, and the height of how beautiful love is without the opposition available to me. So it's like balancing the dichotomy, in my personal opinion, of living as a human and having that opportunity.
I think you summarized and explained that so well. And that was a little bit of what I was going to talk about if you didn't. But as I've interviewed hundreds of people that have had experiences like this, well, like this, they're all different, but NDE type experiences, one of the things that I've learned is that love and fear are opposite emotions. And if they're opposite, can they exist in the same place at the same time? Probably not. And you also mentioned doubt. Fear and doubt go hand in hand, both negative emotions. But when people say they feel love, peace, joy, they're not feeling fear, I believe that's because they're opposites. And if you're in a place of love, you don't feel fear and doubt. The love just overcomes it. It's such a strong emotion, obviously. And then we could go further down that road with people who believe in God, whatever form they believe in. God is love, okay? Now, I'm not saying that you saw love. I'm not saying you saw God. I'm just saying the best definition of God is love, because whatever form of being you believe in, that is the overwhelming definition that always comes out, the overwhelming feeling that people have when they're around that being is love. It's not fear. Some of our scripture is written to make it sound like we need to be fearful, but we don't. Okay, I didn't want to go too far down that road, but thank you. You did a fantastic job with it. Leslie, you mentioned a very brief life review. Is there anything else you can tell us about that?
No, I mean, as an eight-year-old, no. I think because it was a childhood near the experience, it was as unfiltered as possible. Like, it was just so raw. It was so real. I mean, it was like my dogs, because I love, obviously, my dogs and whatnot, my animals. I knew my little sister was safe, of course, in that situation. And then, like, my family was okay. It was just so short. And I had so little to worry about, I think. That it was just, okay, that's where I was, and that's okay. This is what happens after we die, right? And this is my form of heaven, and it is love itself. I'm like, they told me so, okay, like, what's next? Wherever that love takes me, wherever that love goes, because I didn't think I was coming back. I didn't even think about that. Like, it was just, I was just following that love within. Like, it could have popped me out on Mars. I don't know. I would have been fine with it. Like, it was lovely. So yeah, the life review was so very little, so very short, but so focused on that experience with love.
You were only 8 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much can there be?
Yeah.
How much can there be to learn from? Okay. I'm surprised when I'm going to use your terms, this figure asked if you were ready. Did that mean ready to what?
See, that's the thing. Like, it just said, are you ready? And the feeling inside, the thought was, follow me. Like, are you ready to follow me? Cause it didn't say, oh, are you ready to go back? Are you, cause a lot of, you know, sometimes like indies are like, okay, you're going back or you're going forward. It was literally as if it was just, are you ready to be with me? Are you ready to follow me? Cause it was just so focused on that connection with love. And so I think that's why I was just like, okay, yeah, like wherever this is going, I'm with you.
Yeah. I'm surprised you came back after that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Me too.
I almost wonder if there's a piece in there that's missing from your memory that maybe you're going to remember someday.
That's so funny you bring that up. I'm so glad you did, Eric, because someone else brought that up on a podcast. They're like, cause there was a space, there was hours actually. My little sister went inside, and of course she was just beside herself. She ran into where my mother and my sisters were cleaning, and she said, Kara's dead. Kara needs help. Like, you have to go help her. She literally used those words. Like, my older sister said, yeah, she just kept saying you were dead. And so we just laughed and just kept cleaning because we thought she was joking. And they found her literally later in her room, like on the floor crying, like, because they just didn't, you know, I mean, my mother had 8 children. Like, what are you, you know? We're on a farm, like things happen and kids are kids. There were hours like in between there that I could have gone somewhere, had an experience, and then was sent back and just didn't necessarily need to be something in my memory this lifetime, or I'll find it in a meditation later on. But it had to have been beautiful. It had to have been an absolute glorious situation, because when I came back, I was nothing but love walking. It was just beautiful.
Yeah, I think that's very likely.
Yeah.
Because it would be really unusual to be going with that being, and then all of a sudden you're back. It's just like there's a piece of that puzzle missing, and that's okay. These things don't always all come back at one time. That doesn't mean it's any less real or anything like that. So that's something maybe you have to look forward to learning more about it as things go on. All right, let's talk about you're back, you're at the doctor. Give me an idea of first physically of all the injuries that are going on and how you recovered. And then let's talk about where we left off. How did your life change from that point on?
I had the blunt force trauma to my right temporal lobe, and I was on, I mean, they wouldn't let me do anything. No, they couldn't, like, I couldn't play really. And I was like such a social butterfly. And I remember, my second grade teacher, Mrs. Duryea, like, she was like bouffant hair. When she walked, she kind of like, this little head thing is so funny. And she was just the sweetest, kindest, most, you know, gentle spoken person. And I remember I was in class with my cousin, maybe it was my cousin Jeremiah or my friend Clay, and they did a cartwheel. And so without thinking, I did a cartwheel too. And I got really dizzy, and like I fell on the floor. Mrs. Duryea, she lit into me, and like, she like made sure I was okay, got ice and whatnot. But she stapled this note to my sweater or my shirt going home just to make sure that my mom knew. She's like, Cara did a cartwheel. I want you to know I'm so sorry. I wasn't watching her. So I was on lockdown basically until I could, you know, they knew I was okay. With the injury, it is such a stark difference starting in third grade, because I was an excellent student. But in third grade, so I was on second grade, then third grade on, my grades like dropped. Like, I was so funny. I remember going through them, I don't know, in college or something like that. I was like, what is going on? And I put two and two together. So the injury took a lot of my reading comprehension. And my math skills, I could still do that. But like, I'm an audio learner. My mother said, she's like, you never brought home any books. And she's like, I never really understood why. And it's just because like, I heard what you were saying, and what I retained, I got right. But they never really put the two together to help the correct way until I actually was in college. So moving forward, that's really the only fallout I had from it. But like spiritually and personally, like I was, like I said, I was like walking love. I was always a social butterfly. My mother put me in school early because she's like, you were ready. So I was like young for my age. Yeah, like a year almost younger than everybody. I had a very deep connection with nature, with specifically animals. I loved being outside. The only way I can explain it is that being outside in nature, because I was raised in a ranch, like there's nothing around, there's no city, and it's just obviously, it was almost like that was the only place my soul fit, because the oneness that I'd experienced that was obviously so vast. I mean, like, it's like basically love just opened up and it's like never ending now. Like, it just kind of felt like underneath the stars and the sky, really, I could just breathe. Then connecting with people specifically, I was already socially a bubble, but like, wanted to love everybody. I wanted to tell them about love. I wanted to share that with them. I wanted to be everyone's friend. I didn't understand why there was conflict. Like, why are we arguing and whatnot? Like, why, you know, why can't we get along? Like, this, like, love is everywhere. Like, can't you see it kind of thing? Moving forward, that was a little bit of a challenge to balance. But because I had such a unique experience with love, and I basically after that developed this beautiful relationship with love. So anytime that I had a challenge, like my family home wasn't supportive. And so I felt myself alone a lot, and that gave me time to meditate and pray. And I found that helped my connection with love, and it turned into I would be in stillness, and then I would meditate and breathe, like breath work and stuff. So anyway, what could have been a negative in the isolation actually turned out to be a beautiful positive, because I've just got this amazing connection with the divine that I've like developed since a child. And so it's easier for me to kind of slip into that dwelling place and ask questions and find answers and whatnot. Some of the connections that I have, I call them the fingerprints of love, like those undeniable moments where like love shows up and that inner voice is developed with that relationship with love. Was I had like premonitions of the deaths of loved ones when I was growing up, three of them. Had an experience with a cow. I know that sounds funny, but I knew she was going to die and no one else believed me. Like she was in labor and it was going poorly and they're like, oh, just let her alone. Anyway, long story short, I knew that was going to happen. And that was the first one. And it led into my grandmother's passing, a family friend, and then a brother-in-law. And I knew beforehand. And it was because that inner voice showed up. Like love was like, it's grandma. You should say goodbye to her. And then it was Jenny. And then of course my brother-in-law. And again, though, each time this happened, it was just a deeper solidification of that connection with love. And there were a few other moments where they were like, now I know there were many like energetic healings. That was beautiful because that started my journey, because it was before I graduated high school that it kind of set me off into the world with.
Did all of that love also open you up to some hurt?
Oh gosh, thank you for asking that. Yes, because they didn't have my eyes to see and my ears to hear. They didn't have that experience with love. I could not understand how they functioned the way they functioned, why they were so distant or hurtful. Being an empath, of course, I know that word now, but I didn't know that then. That experience made me just like a fully open empath. I was feeling their emotions. And so I was trying to help them because I was like, oh no, like if you feel like this, let me help you. Let me introduce you. And then it really was very difficult. And I went on a journey after high school, coming back to understanding that was why. But yes, it was very difficult.
Yeah. I heard something funny recently, just somebody else that I interviewed a couple of days ago. And I don't know if her episode is going to come out before or after yours. It doesn't matter. But she had her experience as an adult and it made her feel all this abundance of love, not just around her, but for everybody and for all these people. She was saying it kind of screwed up her dating life because she would like see all the good and fall in love with nearly every guy and sometimes just tell them, and it didn't go so well because of that.
Oh, poor soul. Oh, what a sweetheart.
But what a wonderful thing, you know, what a wonderful problem to have to love people too much.
Absolutely.
All right, before we let you go, I just wanted to mention you've got a book out called Meant for Miracles. I can't wait to read it. I have a feeling it's a beautiful story, but I haven't read it yet. So anyway, we'll figure that one out. We'll talk later. So we mentioned your book. You have a conference coming up too?
I do, yes. So this is a little flyer for it. It's called the Truth Tellers Conference. It's going to be hosted here in Dallas, Texas. The keynotes I have are Scott Drummond, Benny Tolman, Jeff Olson, and Barbara Bartolome, and myself will all be speaking. What I wanted to do is on my journey, I realized that it was honestly in the chaos of COVID, we were all like working through things. Like we all kind of had like a spiritual awakening at one time, I believe. But I realized the perspective of my life and what my truth was, like what my life was. And so I couldn't help but be overwhelmed by how transformed I was from that. And when I started writing my book and then speaking about it at all these conferences and then the podcasts, I was transformed and I'm finding other people who are transformed by just sharing our truths, right? And so the Truth Tellers Conference is where truth and transformation happen. I wanted to bring people together that feels like coming home, not just with each other because we love each other, but to yourself. To know your truth, to own your truth, and to be inspired by these stories that the people have, near-death experiences and you know, miraculous healings and whatnot. It is an opportunity to be with others like you who may be on the journey of finding out what your truth is or are literally speaking your truth, and you can find others to just be with. to connect with. And I wanted that, and it's coming together beautifully. So it's Dallas, Texas, February 20th through the 21st in 2026. My website is caramarlene.com, and the Truth Tellers Conference is up there. You can click on it. I'm doing an early bird special for $129, but I'll send Eric a special promo that you can get discount code for $30 more off. So the general admission would be $99, and the VIP would be $200.
Great. We'll stick a link in the show notes for everybody. I would love you to leave everybody with some kind of a message of hope today.
Okay. I love this because I cry every time. I want everyone, if I could just leave everyone with something, is that I want you to understand how miraculous and magical you are. On my journey, after I really understood what happened to me and everything made sense, like looking back from the near-death experience and all these other moments with the divine, with love, I really dove deep into the miraculousness of life itself. And I want everyone to understand you are a walking miracle. Like, you were meant for miracles. Like, this entire universe, from the fact that we are in a galaxy, right? In a universe, we're the only place with life that the odds of that statistically is outrageous. Like, it's literally miraculous. And then the fact that you're here listening to this, like, it's 14 trillion to one that you're here anyway. And that goes up exponentially just every moment you're here. And I hope that by you listening to this podcast, hopefully it hits home that you are, like, you are meant for miracles, because everything here is a miracle, and love holds it all together, and it wants a connection with you, and that you are here for a reason. And whether you are on your path and you're living your best life, or you're in a situation where you maybe question things or you're looking or whatnot, either way, I want to remind you how beautiful you are and how strong that love wants you to know that, and that it set this entire world up to keep reminding you. And so I hope you have the eyes to see that, and the ears to hear that, and the heart to understand, and the sound mind that it is your birthright to live a free life. And it is just literally like a breath away. And I'm so glad you're here.
That was so beautiful. Cara Marlene, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks again for listening and sharing this podcast. Don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button and sign up for our newsletter at roundtripdeath.com. If you want to share your near-death experience, or if you have questions or comments about the show, send an email to eric@roundtripdeath.com. Until then, I wish you everything good that you're looking for in this life and the next.